Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. The weather guys are back with us today. You know, last month when they were on, we talked about, what do you think? We talked about the rain and moisture. And you know what we're going to talk about this time? The rain and moisture and a whole lot more with them. Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our guest. Steve directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. John, a professor as well in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. Both these guys are there. And ready to answer your questions. What would you like to know about the recent flooding? We'll talk about that in just a minute. But before we get to that, I want to talk just a little bit about the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Could you believe that I'd actually talk about that? Of course I would, because it's really important. You count on the Ideas Network for great discussions, and it's your gift, any amount that makes these discussions possible. Listener support, single largest source of funding for WPR programs. And that's why your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important. I'm looking on our screens now to find out how we did last hour. And last hour, we received 15 pledges. Thank you, everybody who made a contribution. But you know what? This hour, we have a goal of 30. Oh, so help pay for the programs you rely on every day when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars, and we do get funding from the federal government and from the state, of course. But it's voluntary listener contributions that make up the single largest source of funding for WPR. So your support, vital to keep Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. And now that you know how important listener support is, make your pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You listen to WPR because you can count on unbiased reporting. You can count on interesting discussions, great music. You probably agree that Wisconsin is a better place because we have access to high-quality news and entertainment programming. And that quality is possible thanks to you. We call you members. You're a listener right now. If you're not a member yet, take that next step right now. Your donation, what should we do, $120 a month, $120 a month, or maybe $120 a year, $10 or $120 a month, whatever in between, it doesn't matter. Make Wisconsin a place where great radio is available to everyone at any time. So give now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Make your gift on this first day of our fall membership drive, and you'll get not one, but two pairs of WPR socks. They're just the thing your feet are looking for. They're cotton, warm, and stylish.
An extra pair of socks. I would probably keep them in my purse because you never know when your feet are going to get wet.
I would guard them very closely.
I'd give them to a friend who loves WPR.
It's up to you. When you give $10 a month, or make a one-time gift of $120 today. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your pledge. Larry Mueller here, asking for your support during this fall membership drive because it what makes WPR programs you rely on possible. So your gift, hey, if it's $10 a month or more, we'll send you those socks, and they are really beautiful socks, as a matter of fact. I'd like to see John Martin and Steve Ackerman wearing those socks, as a matter of fact. And maybe they will have socks. They both give generously of their time and talents to Wisconsin Public Radio. How about you? Giving to WPR is pretty easy. It all takes a few minutes of your time. And a gift of any amount, let's say it's $10 a month, and that donation comes back to you every day in the form of great programmings, So I hope you'll show your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. I said we had a goal of 30. Well, we've gotten a couple of pledges, so we're down to 28. So we're on our way. You make WPR programs possible when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Your gift is powerful, really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And thanks if you've already contributed. If you haven't, do it right now while you're listening to our two guests today, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Steve, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, it's great to be here. And those are groovy-looking socks.
They are. Oh, yeah. You've got the
right
socks
there, right there. Right, yep.
Right in front of you. John, what do you think? Would you look good in those socks?
I would, but my mind is on other socks from Boston this fall, as you might guess.
The red
I thought they
socks.
Were out of it.
They are not out of it.
No, they are definitely not out of it. Well, are we out of the rain? That's the question. I think everyone knows we had an awful lot of rain this past few weeks. What kind of records did we set?
Well, I think we did set a state record for most rainfall in 24 hours. I think it's still officially unofficial.
I think it's officially unofficial.
Right? But I have a feeling that since it hasn't been declared invalid this point, as far as I know, that they're probably closing in on. It takes a long time sometimes to officiate on these kinds of things, but I think they're going to probably declare that eventually as a state record 24-hour rainfall.
What was it?
I think it was on the order of 14 inches.
Yeah, almost
and
15.
The old record was 11.46 or something like that, and so it just crushed.
Over 3 inches more.
Yeah, just crushed the old record set in 1946. So that's one issue. And then Steve and I were talking on the way over, the flooding downtown and you know, where the Ohio River is connecting the lakes is still hard to imagine that it isn't fresh. It's now 3 weeks old, and it still looks like it happened yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
Are we going to continue to see rain like this in the years to come, or do you think, was it a fluke?
You know, the predictions are that we'll get, you know, more than heavier rainfalls with time, but getting something like this, I mean, this is such an outlier. It'll be hard to produce this, and extreme events are just really, well, they're extreme and they're hard to reproduce.
Everything has to be working in the same phase to make these things that extreme.
Well, what the heck conditions are there that cause that kind of issue?
Well, everybody probably remembers how muggy the summer was especially the first part of August. So we were really in a deep into a tropical air mass laden with water vapor in the air, and then that particular day was very unusual for mid to late August. We had a really strong extratropical type disturbance come right by us, actually to our south, that put us in a position to experience an extended period of heavy rain, and driven by the dynamics that characterize wintertime storms, but fueled by the water vapor that's characteristic of summertime storms.
Yeah.
That's a rare combination. And that's, in my mind, that's the basis for the unusual nature of that event.
By the way, as we talk here with Steve Ackerman and John Martin, and you have a question, I hope you'll join in. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, and you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Mike in Lake Mills has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mike. Mike, are you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. I just had a question for professors about global warming, and if there is a book they could recommend for the non-scientists to sort of understand the mechanics of climate and how it's generated and perhaps how it is being affected.
Steve, you got something?
Yeah, I got something. I'm trying to think of the title, and the guy's first name, his last name is Hansen.
Jim Hansen.
It's not Jim Hansen.
Oh, it's not, sorry.
He was at NCAR, the National Center for Atmospheric Research, and now works for
Bob Hansen?
I think it's Bob Hansen, yeah.
H-A-N-S-O-N?
Yeah, yeah.
Not E-N. Okay, yeah. S-O-N.
And he's got a nice book out there where it's phrased in terms of questions as well. So typical type question that somebody might have about global warming, and then he answers it scientifically correctly and in non-jargon type of language. Hmm. And he works for, who is it, the people in Michigan that the weather...
Weather Underground?
Weather Underground.
Oh, okay.
Weather
Underground. Underground.
Yeah. So if you look at Weather Underground and Hansen, Bob Hansen, you
That's
should come
up
with the book.
Up. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Good luck, Mike. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Jill in Rock Springs, what's on your mind?
I was wondering what would happen if the rain was in the form of snow and how much it would be and what it would, you know, would it close things down? Would it?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jill. Thanks a lot for calling.
I can tell you this, John would be very happy.
I would.
How many?
That's a lot of snow.
On a fluffy, there's different kinds of snow.
Yeah, that's right. So the ratio between liquid equivalent or rainfall that's measured and snowfall that might ensue if it were cold enough can vary. But usually the baseline is about 10 inches of snow for an inch of rain. And on a day where it's deep, cold air and it's, you know, the fluffy snow that kind of blows around, it can be as high as 20 or 25 inches of snow for an inch of rain. So let's just take the lowest value of, I'll even go lower than 10. Let's say 8 inches is the equivalent. 8 inches of snow for an inch of rain. Then in Cross Plains, there would have been, 112 inches of snow. So nearly 10 feet of snow. delivered in what, 15 hours? So it would have been unbelievable.
It would have been like Buffalo, New York.
It would have been just like Buffalo, or worse, but something on that order. Yeah. Or like Superior, Wisconsin.
In one day, though.
Yeah, in one day.
Are we likely to get something like that here? Jill, I mean, that was a good question, Jill. Thanks.
Yeah, no, there's a couple of things working against it. One is when you go away from the summertime, you end up with a lot less water vapor in the air. So there isn't as much water to convert into snow. But, you know, even if we had half that, if you got 50 inches of snow in a big event in this state, away from the lakes, that would be so noteworthy as to be the single memory you had as a kid if you were below the age of 10. Yeah. You'd never forget that.
Yeah. Yeah, school would probably be canceled for
a whole week at least. Yeah. At least. Yeah. Yeah, that would be very awesome, wouldn't it?
There you go, Jill. Thanks again. Carl in Verona, it's your turn. Hi, Carl.
Hi. I'd like to ask the professors if we've now passed a tipping point and where we're in a situation where the nonlinear feedbacks are causing maybe a runaway climate change with CO2 and methane release from the Arctic tundra and the Arctic seafloor. And I'm wondering if we're now going to have very rapid warming due to these feedbacks that are basically nonlinear.
All right. Steve, what do you think?
That's a good question. I don't think I think it depends on how you define tipping point, in the sense that if you define a tipping point, are we going to return back to the weather of the 1950s, 1960s? And the answer is no, right? I mean, even if we would stop emitting CO2 gases that we're normally doing, we're going to continue to warm just because those gases stay in the atmosphere that long. As more methane comes out, if we're having permafrost begin to warm up and melt, that'll have another impact in terms of warming up the atmosphere because methane is a greenhouse gas. Whether or not that's going to accelerate it to I wouldn't want to use the phrase running greenhouse or type effect, because usually we look at that and associate it with Venus, which is really, really warm.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're approaching that kind of runaway effect. But, I mean, there's a lot we don't know about what's going on in the Arctic. We've seen the ice sheets there melt a lot more rapid than we've been able to predict. That just emphasizes, I think, our lack of knowledge of how the Arctic works.
Yeah, I think there are some people who are worried about this in a serious way, and they may be right, but I think maybe we can turn the corner. However, it's natural systems. We're hearing about this week down in the Carolinas. It hasn't rained from Hurricane Florence, Tropical Storm Florence, in over a week, and yet the flooding is still intensifying in some locations. So, you know, in some kind of a rough analogy, even if we stop business as usual today, we've baked a lot of CO2 warming into the cake, and maybe to the point where the feedbacks are becoming overlapping and amplifying.
Carl, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with our two guests, John Martin and Steve Ackerman, our weather guys, about weather and climate. It's always great to have them come by. And it's always good to see Mike Crane come by as well during our fall membership drive. Our goal is to keep bringing you topics like weather and climate. These guys come by every single month, the last Monday of the month, and your support makes that happen because listener support's actually the single largest support of funding for WPR programs. So I hope you'll give now. Any amount makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Mike, welcome. How are we doing here?
We're doing great. The pledge drive is going well because people are getting in touch, whether it's online or on the phone, and making their pledges of support, and including during this hour. We've heard from 4 new members and a total of 9 so far toward our overall goal for the hour of 30 members. So thanks, everybody, for helping make this hour successful so far. Make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every day.
WPR programs are, of course, listener-powered. That means that your pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 really helps pay for the programs you rely on. It really does make a difference.
Now, you might not have a life coach or a bug expert or your own personal gardener or your own personal weatherman, but you do have the Larry Mueller Show and all of the great shows that you hear on the Ideas Network where you can get advice and insight. You can hear that there would have been 110 inches of snow if that had been snow only a few weeks ago. Just an amazing fact to consider that possibility. And, you know, when you listen to the Ideas Network, you get all of this without cost, yeah. Although we'd love to have you help pay the cost. You choose. The Ideas Network is your source for helpful information, so support it now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And, Mike, I like you said, I like it when you said you choose, because when you become a sustainer, as you listen to Mike and I talk here, you do choose a monthly gift amount and set it up. Can come out of your bank account or credit card. You could do it automatically, and it continues for as long as you like.
Because WPR is one of those things you never want to live without. Provide reliable support with a convenient and flexible sustaining membership. Get started now with a gift of $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Picture yourself in your home. You have your hands full.
I would use 2 forks when I ate.
I would play the guitar, play the piano.
I'd probably do more cooking.
Whether you're cooking, cleaning, exercising, working, gardening, entertaining family, friends, kids, pets, it's a lot. This fall membership drive, we have just the thing to help. You'll have 5 chances to win a Sonos One speaker and enjoy the one thing that's totally hands-free, listening to the WPR programs you love. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Find all the rules and details at WPR.org/drawing. Donate any amount right now to be entered. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Larry Mueller here with Mike Crane, raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs you enjoy on the air. And I don't care, your pledge, it could be $10 a month, it could be $100 a month. We appreciate and we count on your gift.
Yeah, the beauty of making a voluntary contribution to support WPR is that you get to decide how much you give. And we're going to suggest amounts that can be helpful, maybe $100 or $200 a month.
That might be what you pay for cable or maybe your family phone plan. Listening to WPR is something you do every day. You put a value on it, like the other things that are important to you, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Well, Larry, it looks like we have 21 more pledges to go in about 34 minutes. I know we can get there with the help of people listening right now. So here's how you do it. You get in touch at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's an important part of making the programs you enjoy possible.
And a special thanks to sustaining members. If you're a sustaining member making ongoing monthly gifts, I want to thank you so much. And today maybe is the day you increase your support of WPR. Maybe it's $5 a month or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Taking a look at climate and weather today with our weather guy, Steve Ackerman, and John Martin from the UW Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Steve also directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. Join in with your own questions, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Bill in Green Bay has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Bill. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thanks, Larry. Just wondering, how do they determine the location of a hurricane when it hits land?
Oh, good question.
Yeah. Steve, you want to tackle that one?
Yeah. I would think, and I'm pretty sure this is the way they do it, they look at the radar data, because our coastlines are covered pretty well by radars, and that allows them to identify the center of the storm or the eye of the storm, and then look at where that eye hits land. And I think, although I'm not totally sure of this, that they pick the center of the eye.
That's probably right, yeah. I'm not sure of it either, but I think that's right.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah, and they might also be able to use the surface winds to figure out that what they see on the radar is the eye is sort of the center of the circulation of the storm as well to really pinpoint it. Maybe they use a combination of those two
things. Yeah, I was thinking, but I'm not sure they have enough land observations of wind.
Sometimes
in order
they don't,
to do
yeah.
That.
Sometimes so they don't.
That's
yeah.
why I was thinking radar.
I would use the radar, I guess, if it were up to me, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, there we go, Bill.
So that's
you.
How we would do it, whether or not the National Hurricane Center does it that way.
And I think it's kind of well known, maybe, that Florence made landfall, however that's determined, and they didn't fudge it, 2 miles away from the spot that was forecasted at 5 days out in advance.
Wow, that's remarkable.
That's a remarkable forecast.
That's remarkable. That is
it won't be repeated, but it's remarkable.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. Jim and Wanakee, your turn.
Oh, hi. Thanks for the program.
Sure.
I have a question in terms of, for the scientist, in terms of, do you have, computer models that indicate what's going to be happening to the Midwest, specifically Wisconsin, you know, in terms of, we already have seen, of course, the flooding and so forth, but is more of that to come, and if so, is there any strong indication that the community planner should be doing, starting to prepare, that you can't change what's going to happen, but you can prepare for it in terms of, like in the Isthmus area, maybe building higher, homes higher off the ground, like they're doing along the coast and so forth? Any data on that or opinion as to what we can do to prepare, or like in the area of crops, what crops we grow. I understand that, agriculture, like cattle and so forth, they emit a lot of methane, which is much more potent, in terms of CO2 than and climate warming than just carbon dioxide. So anything like maybe farmers could start planting more grains, instead of more and more cattle operations and hog operations.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly models, climate models of different scales and different types that are looking at how global change is occurring, but then also bringing that down to the regional scales, like Wisconsin. When you look at that, things that become, I think we have very good confidence in, is that we're going to continue seeing a warming. We're going to be seeing our winters getting shorter. We're going to be seeing streams and lakes generally warming up. We're going to see nighttime temperatures continue to warm. These are all things that we have been observing and are predicted to continue. Whether or not we're going to get the type of flooding that we recently had here in southern Wisconsin, again, I think that would be classified as an extreme event and not something to really easily predict. I'm sure it's going to occur again, but maybe in 100 or 200 years. I don't think it'll be as frequent, once a year down the road. And I think with regard to planning, I know we visited 21 different libraries a couple of years ago talking about climate change with the folks in those libraries across the state. And I was pleasantly surprised how many communities are actually talking about, what are we going to do as we go forward, as they recognize that climate change is occurring and it's going to affect their region and their economy. I mean, if our winters are getting smaller, that means if you're depending on winter tourism, you got to start thinking about what's going to be happening.
Yeah, and as Steve points out, there was a time not that long ago, 10 or 15 years ago perhaps, when it wasn't really possible to make confident statements about regional impacts of some of the changes that we're expecting. And now with sophisticated forecast models and sophisticated new insights about the science, we're making those projections. And they're lining up, as Steve also pointed out, with the things that we're seeing. So we may not see a 15-inch rainfall every summer, but there is an expectation for a higher frequency of intense rainfalls, which might fall some threshold level below that, but still you'd note. It's coming. It's here.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate your call. Dave in Prairie du Sac, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I had a question about a book I read not too long ago by Rachel Carson that she wrote in the early 50s before she wrote Silent Spring, part of a trilogy. This book was called The Sea Around Us. And I know maybe you guys aren't oceanographers, but in that book, there was a interesting theory that she presented from a person, a scientist named Otto Peterson, back in maybe the 19th century or early 20th century, about the potential impact on climate change from giant submerged ocean waves. And I wondered if that theory is still current or has any, relevance in the climate discussion today.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with what the theory entails. The suggestion might be that there's a lot of heat content somewhere in the ocean that can every once in a while be burped up to the surface in a giant wave of some kind. If that's the case, I don't hear any discussion of that among colleagues who specialize in this field. What we are still considering and are concerned about is what's the capability of the ocean for dissolving carbon dioxide? Are we at the saturation point? And I think oceanographers don't know the answer to that. And that's a big question in the climate issue. But it appears as though there's something close to a saturation because we keep on increasing the fraction in the overlying atmosphere year to year. So, but that's a big question. And there's a lot of water in the ocean that's out of play. It hasn't come to the surface in thousands of years. And that water has presumably got a lot less carbon dioxide in it. And so there's no artificial way to get it to the surface. If there were, we could leach some of it out from the atmosphere. But these things take very, very long time scales to operate. So maybe that's part of what was in Carson's theory, too. I'm not sure.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Dave, for calling. Mike in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I'm concerned that there's too many people that just kind of accept now the fact that we have global warming and climate change, and they're more concerned about planning, which is a good idea, and make sure that everybody's ready for the warmer changing conditions. But what I'm really concerned is nobody's talking about the major contributors of global warming. For example, in transportation, people are driving more than ever. The president has cut regulations on methane. The jet airliners like Boeing and et cetera are just loading the atmosphere with greenhouse gases through trips, voluntary vacations to France and Italy and Australia and whatever. What are those significant contributors to the problem we're going to be having?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, you're raising a couple of issues here. One is what can be done and what should be done and how is it done? And I think there are two aspects to that with regard to how can it be done. I think one is at the personal level. So people making personal decisions of either not flying or driving more energy efficient cars in terms of transportation, buying more local products as opposed to far away products. And then there's the business aspect of it. So the businesses have to decide what are they going to do, if anything. And then there's the political side. And while I would personally tend to agree with your analysis of what the current administration is doing, I think that you'll see that there's a lot of communities, cities and towns that are actually looking at what they can do to reduce their carbon munitions, and, you know, not just communities, but whole states like California.
And a lot of businesses, too, because it makes economic sense.
If they can make economic sense, they'll do it.
It makes a lot of economic sense for a lot of businesses. And but still, there is no harm in the individual deciding that he or she is going to contribute to a goal of reducing emissions. And that means turning your lights off when you're out of a room. You know, maybe turning your computer off at night if you're not using it. Some of us tend to leave such things plugged in. There's a variety of things you can do. I want to point out, as we're talking about this, we have a world expert on sustainability, especially in the face of the climate problem, who's coming to speak on our campus on Thursday night. Professor John Foley is coming. He's going to be at the Discovery Institute, the main DeLuca Forum rotunda there. Please come at 7 o'clock. He will give a sterling presentation. And I want to tell you, it will be an optimistic view of the future. It won't be gloom and doom. And that's the biggest part of his message, is that we can figure out how to simultaneously solve the problem that we have and advance our civilization. I'm really looking forward to this presentation.
And repeat again, the time is
7 p.m. on Thursday night, which is, what is that, the 29th of September or the 28th?
Yeah.
I think it's the 28th, Thursday the 28th. So it's Thursday night this week, 7 p.m. at the Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery, the DeLuca Forum. It's free. Everyone's welcome.
Mike, thanks again for calling. We have an email from Terry in Cuba City. We're back to talking about storm and precipitation measurements. If you've got a storm where essentially the rain's horizontal to the ground, do our conventional rain gauges actually work in these extreme weather conditions?
I think the excellent rain gauges, the kind you buy at the hardware store for $10, no, they don't. They're going to fail you in those kind of extreme conditions. But the really professional grade rain gauges are going to do a pretty darn good job, even in extreme conditions like that. They're going to give you a pretty decent measurement. So, yes.
Steve Ackerman, John Martin with us today from the University of Wisconsin Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Always great to have them come by. And always great to have Mike Crane come by as well, who is with me to help me talk to you about the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive at WPR. Listener contributions, the single largest source of funding. Your gift keeps the programs you value, including this one, on the air. So I hope you'll make your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Are we making progress?
We are making progress, Larry. We have 18 pledges to go to meet our goal for this hour, and we'd love to hear from you when you're going to help fund the Larry Miller Show and all the other WPR programs you count on by giving now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
For a long, long time, our two guests today, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, have been coming on the last Monday of the month for years to talk about climate and weather. I always learn a lot whenever they come by, and I bet you do as well. And I think it's one of the real benefits that we have here. We've got some really smart guys who come in and talk about a topic that the weather, everybody is concerned about the weather, and everybody seems to be concerned about climate as well. And that's the kind of program we try to put forth to you every day here at Wisconsin Public Radio. We're listener-supported, and that means that when you give at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552, you make this hour and many more hours possible. So I hope you'll choose an amount that works for you and then take a few minutes and make your pledge.
Well, it's obvious that the change in the weather, as opposed to the climate, which is a whole different issue, but the weather is turning cooler for the year, and that means people are thinking of staying warm. And one of the suggestions we have is to let the world know you're a WPR fan by wearing new WPR socks. You can ask for your pair when you give $10 a month or more, or a one-time gift of $120. Your gift supports these great programs, these conversations with the weather guys and all the rest, and you can get stylish and comfortable WPR logo socks. It starts with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
There are many reasons to give to Wisconsin Public Radio. This drive, one of them is that your donation of any amount gets you entered into a drawing for a Sonos One smart speaker. You'll have 5 chances to win. We hope you'll donate to enter, but you don't have to donate to win. You can send a postcard with your name, address, email, and phone to WPR Smart Speaker Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Sustainers, we've got you covered. You're automatically entered. Check out the rules and details at WPR.org/drawing. Your donation of any amount right now gets you entered. Here's how to give.
Pledge at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Wisconsin Public Radio's Mike Crane. Here to tell you that listener support is the single biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. And that's why your support during this fall membership drive is so important. And maybe your gift is $10 a month or maybe it's $100 a month. We certainly have had folks contribute $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose, though, that is the right amount.
Well, and that's exactly right. Larry's said something we make a strong point of, which is that we're going to suggest amounts, but it's up to you. So maybe this would be helpful. Think about a formula like this. Let's say you hear 3 things a day that you are really glad you heard. And what if you paid a dime for each one of those? Well, that would work out to $10 a month. If that math adds up for you, then make a gift of $10 a month right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have 17 more pledges to go to reach our goal for the hour. And we've got, 16 and a half minutes or so to get them. You make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org. or at 888-202-2552.
And it's great to hear from Rebecca from Madison, who regularly donates to public radio and made a donation this time. And we're hearing from outside the state, too.
Yeah.
Kathleen from Indianapolis says, because a day without Larry Mueller and Chapter a Day is a dull day. And this is the warmth thought, right? Because I had to have that sweatshirt.
They're nice-looking sweatshirts. They're nice-looking socks, too. You know, there's a new fad out there where guys are wearing their the dress pants shorter and then showing off their socks.
Yeah.
I could see John Martin always wears a suit. I could see him with his pants leg pulled up and modeling those WPR socks.
I think you're right on.
He says here.
Yeah, I think you're right on about that. I look at them a little more carefully now. There's plenty of red in them.
Yeah, there's plenty of red in them. Well, what about you? Your gift is powerful. It really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Taking a look at weather and climate today with our two guests, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, both from the UW-Madison Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. Questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. The lecture by Dr. Foley that you were talking about, John,
yeah,
is September 27th.
27th. I had the date of the month.
Yeah, not the 28th. So it's September 27th. At 7 p.m. at the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery. It's 330 North Orchard Street in Madison. But Wisconsin Institute for Discovery, you can go online and find out all the information about that. We had Pete emailing us wondering if there's a website he can use to find historical weather data for temperature and precipitation for specific days. He's planning a long-distance kayak camping trip for mid to late October, and he'd like to get an idea of when is his best chance for good weather.
Mm.
He says he's okay with rain and cold. His fiance is typically not.
Mm.
I'm going to let you handle this, John.
Precipitation is really hot. You can't get any useful information about from climatological precipitation values, because let's say you're out on October 10th, on the Kickapoo River, on average, 0.02 inches of rain will fall, because that means on 9 days out of 10 October 10ths, it's rained or it hasn't rained, but on one of them was an inch of rain. You divide by 10, you get this small amount. So you don't get any good information from that. You can, by going to the National Weather Service websites, depending on where you're going. If it's in the western part of the state, you might try La Crosse. If you're going up to the northeast, you might try Green Bay, and here in Madison for the southern central part of the state, Milwaukee. Then you can find several different cities have a climatological report on the Weather Service webpage. They're not particularly well designed. They're not convenient for the user, although they do have a search, so you can search for, you know, climo. And then you can get a nice information about temperature, overnight lows on average, daytime highs, and then this weird amalgam of average precipitation.
Okay.
So you can find that information. I would think the precipitation is the least trustworthy. The temperatures for highs and lows are pretty good.
But this is probably the right time, right? I mean, yeah. Particularly not, maybe not too late October, but
yeah, if I were going to do this, yeah,
this would be the time to do
you
it.
You bet. I'd go in the first half of October for sure. He's got the right idea, and you can rely on some pretty good weather.
Kenneth in Janesville wondered if any location in Wisconsin has had frost yet. Do you guys know offhand?
I don't know.
I do not think so, though. Yeah. I don't know for sure how
it
far.
It wasn't as cold this weekend as it looked like it was going to be just before it happened. So that was, I thought maybe Saturday some places north would get it, but I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah.
They will by next week.
Maybe some of our friends in the north will call in and let us know for sure. Anton in Madison, your turn now. Thanks a lot for calling.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having the program.
Sure.
Small world, of course. My father was WCM here in Wisconsin up until several years ago. Maybe you guys know Rusty. And I thought I'd call him because he incidentally did his master's at your department. And I hadn't talked to him about the ghost satellites for a long time. But what do you know, this weekend I was at their house, and the conversation turned into his old master's work. And I thought, hey, you know, I wonder if anyone knows about current frontiers and weather satellites or new data sources. So here we are, and you guys are doing the program, and I thought I'd ask.
Well, I bet you Steve Ackerman knows a little.
Yeah, we know a lot. In fact, I just came back from a meeting in Estonia between Europeans and folks in the U.S. talking about the European satellites as well as our weather satellites. We just had we're on a new edition, if you will, of satellites. One is GOES-16. It's got increased the number of spectral regions, which can tell us more about the atmosphere. And it's got better spatial and temporal resolution. So we could look at thunderstorms every 30 seconds now, which is just phenomenal. We recently launched a second one. We always maintain two GOES satellites, which stay in orbit and rotate around the Earth at about the same speed. So it looks like we're fixed up a space so we can watch the weather storms move. That one's got a little problem in one of its images that we use at nighttime. So they're trying to figure that out, and there are scientists here at UW working closely with the NOAA scientists trying to figure out how we can ameliorate that little problem that they're having. They think it's dirt in one of the instrumentation stuff. Yeah. So, but you know, we have a lot of bright people, so I think we'll figure it out.
I hope so, because I'm looking forward to watching these autumn storms roll in the Pacific on that GOES 17. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
So when do you think we will be seeing it?
Well, I think they're about to release the visible channels, the daytime channels. And I think the key will be the nighttime. We always have spares up there, so one option is at nighttime, just turn the spare on and turn down GOES 17. That to me seems like a very simple solution.
Too simple.
Right, that's why haven't we done it?
we go.
Anton, say hi to your dad for me. I met your dad more than a few times in my career here. He's a really smart and excellent guy.
Yeah, Anton, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Annette in Green Bay, your turn.
Yes, hi. I have a question about water, rainwater specifically, that gathers in a rain barrel from a roof. So I collect the rainwater, and then I use it for gardening, but also to fill a fountain that I have. And sometimes the water is real bubbly, almost foamy, and other times it isn't. It's just kind of flat. And I'm wondering if it matters if the water comes from a charged rainstorm with lots of lightning, and what would make it foamy sometimes and other times it isn't.
When do you notice the foam?
Pretty much right afterward.
So I was wondering, because I had a rain barrel too, and I've never noticed that. course, we don't have one now because I left it out in the wintertime and it froze and cracked.
It's not a snow barrel. What's the matter with
you? I was just dumb. And I never noticed the foam in it, but I'm thinking, you know, in rivers sometimes you'll see foam.
Mm, yeah.
And so I was wondering if it's associated with the disturbance and biological activities.
Yeah.
You know, up in my gutters, and I got to go up and clean those out, you know, every couple of months, and there's a lot of debris and decay in there. And so I'm wondering if it's a combination of that, particularly if you're noticing it right after, which means that there was disturbance as the rain moves into the barrel.
Yeah. The foam on top of the river, I was just drove over the Rock River yesterday, and it looked like the river was going in the wrong direction.
Oh, yeah.
Because
really?
The foam was going one way.
Yeah.
And you know, you had to kind of look carefully.
Yeah,
and
that's weird.
The river was actually going in the other way, but the foam was kind of floating along on the top in the wrong direction. I suppose the wind was
the
taking
wind.
Yeah, it's so easy to move it with the wind. Yeah, that's really interesting.
So that would be my guess.
There you go.
That's a good guess. And I think, isn't there a chance that there's different biology in the raindrops from one time of year to the other, or depending on storms or something?
There could be, depending on what's in the air.
Yeah.
You know, smoke or something in the air could have an impact. Thanks, Annette. Appreciate it. Mary in La Crosse, your turn.
I have a curiosity question. In thinking about all the rains that come with the hurricanes on the East Coast, and that rain, I assume, is drawn off from the salty ocean. So what happens to the salt? Is there salt in the rain, or is it just drawn up separately? And I will take my answer off the air. Thank you.
There's probably very small amounts of salt in the rain, but not like you'd think. It's not rain. It's not seawater that's falling out of the clouds, because the way that, you know, the water vapor gets in the atmosphere is, especially over the ocean, is little droplets of water, liquid water with salt mixed in, will of course be sprayed into the atmosphere by sea breaking waves or whatnot. The water will evaporate, but not the salt. So little particles of salt can actually get themselves involved in the clouds, but predominantly it's pure water. So it's almost 100% pure water that falls out of those things, because especially in a hurricane where there's so much water involved. It's a very good question, though.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our guests today here on the Ideas Network, and Mike Crane will be joining us again right now, as a matter of fact. Mike is director of Wisconsin Public Radio and here to help me talk with you about the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Your support is so essential of the funding of this particular show and all the programs you enjoy on WPR. Listener support, the single largest source of funding for our programs. So this drive is your time to take action. You make the programs possible when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We're looking for 15 more pledges in just the next few minutes. And these hourly goals are set to make sure that we can have the funding for the programs you enjoy. So make your donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Said it earlier, but I will say it again. The weather and climate program that we have the last Monday of every month, a very popular show here. And it's popular, I think, because our guests provide such wonderful information about weather and climate. Think about this show and think about the other shows that we have here on Wisconsin Public Radio. And then think about how much you might give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You make this hour and many more hours possible. Giving just takes a few minutes. So I hope you'll make your pledge right now.
When did you discover Wisconsin Public Radio? I've talked to people, Larry, who found it when they were young children, or people late in life suddenly discovered it when they moved to town. Maybe it was a weekend show, like hearing Garden Talk, your segment on early Saturdays, and obviously on Friday as well. And you never know, but in whatever way you found WPR, now you're hooked, right? So how about making a pledge of financial support?
And whether it's been years or just a few months since you found us, your contribution of, say, $10 a month or maybe $120 a month, it really does support the quality program that you've valued since the first time you listened. So be a part of making WPR possible. Right now, give at WPR.org or at 888 888- 202-252-2552.
Picture yourself in your home. You have your hands full.
I think with free hands, I would definitely be able to get things away from my rambunctious cat a lot faster.
Our backyard seems to be made up of about 40% weeds, and it has been just like a nonstop struggle. So if I had two more hands, I would be pulling out the weeds faster than you can imagine.
I would fold laundry. I would cook. More likely would be doing the dishes from somebody else cooking, picking up the apartment. There's a lot of stuff I could do.
Whether you're cooking, cleaning, exercising, gardening, entertaining family, friends, kids, pets, it really is a lot. This fall membership drive, we have just the thing to help. You'll have five chances to win a Sonos One speaker and enjoy one thing that's totally hands-free. Listening to the WPR programs you love. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Find all the rules and details at WPR.org/drawing. Donate any amount right now to be entered. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your pledge. Larry Mueller here with Mike Crane, asking for your support during our fall membership drive, because it's what makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. And your gift, $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
Well, we value your time, and we want you to know it really takes just a few minutes to make your pledge. You'll still have time for your lunch hour, but you can also be supporting WPR, because all we need is your name, how to get in touch with you, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay, you know, credit card or check.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. We have 12 more contributions to get here and just a few seconds to get them, so why not pledge now? WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Taking a look at climate and weather on the program today, I'm Larry Mueller. My guests, John Martin and Steve Ackerman from the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. Steve also directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. Great to have them back. Questions for them, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. 1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org and we'll get you on pretty quickly. Got open lines. I want to go to the emails because John in Mineral Point emailed to say that they had frost this morning and he had taken a photo of it, and it sure as heck looks like frost to me.
It does. There's no doubt about that.
But that's interesting. Mineral Point's pretty south of, you know.
Yeah. Probably in a, like you're thinking, probably in a valley.
Probably in a valley or something, so that cold air pools down into where he lives. Because that's very hilly over there, or mountainous, depending on your viewpoint.
As I think about the country itself, some parts of the country have received record rains, like us here. Others are in drought conditions. How does that correspond with what's going on climate-wise? Is there anything?
It's difficult to be certain of this. I think that almost any year you look at in late September, you're going to find a part of the country that's had a wet summer and a part of the country that's had a very dry summer. The question is, are those places changing in a fundamental way? And I don't know the answer to that. There are people who are investigating such questions, and so they seem to suggest that, we're getting drier in the already dry places, and we sometimes get a little bit rainier in the already rainy places, and that they are ascribing or attributing to the background change in the climate.
Summer ended last Saturday or
so. Yeah, Saturday night.
So what were any ideas to this, you know, the statistics for the state or for the area?
Yeah, we were above normal in precipitation, obviously, for the southern part of the state, and above normal temperature, but not as Not as large as in previous years.
Yeah, it was fractional,
it was
wasn't it?
Yeah,
yeah, less like than a maybe, degree or
yeah,
something.
Right, something
for the whole season.
So not much difference. That
no, temperature. No.
But that's what you would expect, right? If you get if you're really crazy in precipitation, then you know it's cloudy, so you're not getting the sunshine to warm things up. So that's consistent.
Yeah.
In the Atlantic right now, we have Tropical Depression Kirk, I think, and we've got Subtropical Storm Leslie. How do they differ from a hurricane, someone wonders?
Well, the Tropical Depression Kirk could still evolve into a hurricane.
Okay.
So it may just be in an early stage of what could become a fairly powerful lifetime. I don't know what the projections are on that storm. I should have looked before I came over. The Subtropical Storm Leslie, however, is more likely not going to have much more of a tropical fate, and in which case it will probably be an identifiable feature on the satellite picture, but probably headed to higher latitudes. If it gets there, it'll be like an extra tropical storm, the kind that we are visited with in the fall and the winter, and not a tropical storm, more than likely.
And someone else wondered about, was it Florence that came, the latest hurricane? You said, you mentioned earlier that even though it was passed, like days, we're still in, they're still in a very serious flooding and so forth.
Serious and increasingly serious in some places.
And how does that happen?
Just it takes a long time for the water to percolate through all of the circulation systems of groundwater and rivers and streams and so on. They swell at their sources or at close to the place where the rain entered the system, and then that swell will be carried downstream to places that maybe are also suffering from other aspects of the flood. So it just takes a while for that water to work its way out to sea.
And it's amazing.
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Did you, I don't know if you watched 60 Minutes last night. I watched 60 Minutes last night, and there was one of the segments had to do with a guy from Holland, I believe. And in Holland, they have no trouble with storm surges or anything like that. And you would expect that they would. Well, they spent a lot of money.
Huge amount of money on that.
A long time, some time back, and they have been able to mitigate it. And he says we could do the same thing here. And in fact, he did some work with a community in New York, or just outside of New York, Hoboken, New Jersey. Dave Potras is reminding me because Dave saw that as well. Natural means and so forth. Took some, talking to get people to agree to it, but they've been actually have resolved a lot of their problems through what they're doing.
Yeah, they had a devastating flood in Holland in February 1953, and that mobilized the country.
That mobilized the country, yep. and now they and they've done it, and it they look at the changes they made look attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the berms he was talking about, one of the berms that they had that actually they made an underground parking lot underneath the berm that would several football fields long.
Mm-hmm.
But underground, you don't even know it's there. Mm-hmm. So it's something we ought to. And the interviewer said, "Well, gee, that for example, that in Holland cost $500 million or something like that to build." But he said, "Well, look at what it's cost."
One storm, and boom, you can spend that kind of money.
States, it's really cost a lot of. Anyway, I actually would recommend anybody take a look at that. Go online to the CBS and take a look at that feature because it was eye-opening to me about how much we could actually do to mitigate.
Oh, I think that's right. This just requires will. Maybe there actually will be an infrastructure week some point during the next 2 years or something. They keep promising it, but we've never seen it.
Well, back to Wisconsin here in tornadoes for just a minute. We had two instances of multiple tornadoes occurring at the same time this summer. Is that unusual? I think there were like five at least.
Yeah, we were down. I think 7-2 is what's in my mind. And they came on a couple of occasions.
For the whole summer?
For the whole summer.
Yeah, it was seemingly a small
so
population.
It is. Normally we get 20, 21 or something like that. So
multiple tornadoes?
No, total tornadoes.
Oh, total tornadoes.
Yeah.
This was at the on the same night in
yeah, was
kind of in
the southeast,
through the same area. Yeah, there were like seven of them.
Yeah. There are certain storms that, you know, spawn multiple tornadoes, and they're all on the ground at one time. That is relatively rare. Even in Tornado Alley, it's not that common.
Yeah. How does it happen?
Well, we don't really know everything there is to know about tornadoes, and so I think that that part of the ignorance of that big problem leads us to not really have a good answer for that. But there's a lot of different vortices, small-scale vortices in a tornadic environment in the right storm. And so sometimes all of them can spin up at the same time for reasons that are really hard to understand. People are working on it.
John wondered what's happening with overnight temperatures. They seem warmer than they used to be. Is that true or not?
That's definitely true.
You know, as we've been saying, we're seeing the temperature, average temperature, move up, and a lot of that warm up, and a lot of that is due to the nighttime temperatures warming up and not having really, really cold days.
That's the other
aspect to it.
Yeah, it's a great trick that we're playing on skeptics because, you know, in the summertime, you don't get a huge number of record high temperatures anymore. That just doesn't seem to happen as frequently, but record high minimums are extremely common, so it just isn't cooling off at night. And so that's what's, as Steve says, pumping up the average temperature.
And we had another question about the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. Steve, you want to talk about the institute and kind of what it does and what research or work it's doing?
Yeah, so this is a collaboration between the University of Wisconsin at Madison and the satellite branch of NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So we actually have some NOAA scientists stationed here on campus with us in the same building. And our goal is to work with them to find better ways to use current satellites in terms of forecasting the weather, as well as looking at the next generation weather satellites and how to make them better so that we could improve predictions.
And John, does the department itself talk about the research the department does and how it may or may not relate directly to the...
Oh, it strongly interrelates with what's going on down in Sims. People in the department study tropical cyclones as one kind of headlining interaction with Sims. The satellite perspective gives us an idea about whether or not and to what extent there is vertical shear in the column in the tropics, and that's a huge toxic for the development of hurricanes. And when they sprout, if they sprout in a region where there isn't too much change in the wind speed and direction with increasing elevation, they can really grow. And so the interaction between specialists downstairs and colleagues of mine who are working on hurricane dynamics is really strong. Same with tropical dynamics. And then when we look at extratropical storms, we have a whole bunch of people looking at extratropical storms, myself included, and one can't really do that in a significant or a modern way without having some influence about the way you look at these things imposed on you by the availability of the satellite data. So there's an enormous amount of interaction, and we're learning about day-to-day weather systems, both in the extratropics and the tropics. We're learning about how those weather systems interface and interact with and influence the climate system, and we're looking at how the climate system, on the other hand, influences the parade of tropical and extratropical storms. So it's a playground of ideas about the weather. There's no better place in the world to work. It's as simple as that.
Well, Erin sent a photo, and John, I'm going to have you just slide over. You can take a look at it. She said this happened at around 1:30 in the afternoon. Looking south-southeast, there was no rain. It was a nice day at Terry Andre State Park. Lasted for about 20 minutes. She doesn't think it's a sun dog because it was too far away from the sun. And what are we seeing there, John?
I wish Steve could. Maybe he should go over and see it, too. But it's certainly a cirrus cloud deck, so it's an ice crystal-based phenomena. It's sort of like one of those strips of mother of pearl, you know, where you get the refraction through the ice crystals.
The iridescence.
Yeah, but it's not a sun dog. It's not a little spot. It's kind of a linear strip, but I don't know what it's actually called, but it's formed by refraction of visible light through ice crystals.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So it is, and it's a really cool photo. Erin, thank you so much for sending that photo. I appreciate it. If you go to the National Weather Service site, you can see predictions for temperatures and rainfall that go 3 months out. This kind of goes back to an earlier question from the kayaker. And so let's go back to that. How accurate are those models, and what information is used in coming up with these numbers?
Yeah, that's a pretty statistically based forecast. In fact, if you look at it carefully, you're going to see that it says equal chances for colder or warmer than normal, or equal chances for wetter or drier than normal, except in a few places where it'll say, you know, have a capital A, it'll say above normal temperature or precip, or B for below normal. But they're not really the kind of forecasts that they can't be compared with the same type of forecast that's made for tomorrow, the next day, and the day after that. They're fundamentally different in the way they're configured.
10 days out, still pretty reasonable.
10 days is a pretty good thing. It'll paint the complexion of the day for you accurately more often than not, yes.
Yeah. Always fun to talk with our two guests, our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. John, professor, former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW. Also, Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison, and also a professor in the department with John. So it's always great to have them come by and talk with us about climate and weather. And you can always mark your calendar, because the last day, the last Monday of the month is always when they appear. And often appearing during this time of the year is Mike Crane, because it is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. And Mike, with me in the studio, you rely on the Ideas Network for information, for in-depth discussions. We rely on you to keep the programs like this one going strong. And I tell you what, as Mike, I'm sure, is going to say, listener support is really, really important, isn't it, Mike?
It is. You've taken care of it. We can close the pledge drive out, right? Well, not really. It always takes a little while to raise all the support needed. And so we're here to make sure you know it, that listeners are the largest source of funding for WPR. And that's why your gift of any amount right now makes a real difference. Get in touch, WPR.org, or 888-202-2552.
And we've said this before, but I'll say it again. A large slice of funding for WPR programs, in fact, it's the biggest slice, is listener support. So while all of our funding sources, believe me, are important, the state, federal governments, and businesses, they are all very important, but your contribution makes a huge difference. WPR is the amazing service that it is, thanks to your support. So I hope you'll help us be independent, be producing high-quality programs on the air. You can do it when you give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Well, Larry, we're making progress toward the goal for this last half hour of your show today. And we still have 10 more pledges to go and a little bit less than 10 minutes to get there. So we are certainly hoping that you will get in touch with us right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You're part of Wisconsin Public Radio's community of listeners. Whether you've been listening for years or maybe just for a few months, you can become part of our community of members, people who support the programs that they value.
Now, if you've never given before, here's a suggestion. Start with a pledge of $120, or how about making it an ongoing gift of $10 a month? That will feel even easier. And in any case, your pledge of any amount makes you a member because of what Larry and I have both been talking about, that you are the largest source of funding. You make a difference. So go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Every day, every weekday from 11 to 12:30, we take a break from the news and from politics primarily. We focus on advice topics. We talk about the outdoors, interesting things going on at the university and in the state, health issues, finances. And, yeah, a good example, I think, is today's show on weather and climate.
Yeah, I love learning every time that we listen to the weather guys and how they often make this distinction, right? That there's weather, that's what happens every day, and there's climate, which is the big picture over multiple days, weeks, months, and years. It's just wonderful to have this information and helped us to understand the world better. And there is a not-so-secret ingredient to the winning recipe for making this happen, and that's listener support, your support. You make great programs. You make the Ideas Network possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I haven't put my new socks on yet, but I plan to put those socks on at some point. What socks am I talking about? The new WPR socks. So you can ask for your pair when you give $10 a month or more, or a one-time gift of $120. Your gift supports the programs you care about, and you can get these stylish and comfortable socks starting with your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Picture yourself in your home. You have your hands full.
I like to sew, and I also like to rehab furniture that I find at estate sales, so it would be great if I had someone else to help me sand and paint.
Every night, my husband and I like to make a good meal that we enjoy together. Between chopping veggies and pouring pasta into a pan, it would be nice to, you know, have hands free for that.
If I had two free hands, I would do those cat's cradle things. Do people still play with yo-yos?
Whether you're cooking, cleaning, exercising, gardening, entertaining family, friends, kids, pets, it really is a lot. This fall membership drive, we have just the thing to help. You'll have 5 chances to win a Sonos One speaker and enjoy one thing that's totally hands-free: listening to the WPR programs you love. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Find all the rules and details at WPR.org/drawing. Donate any amount right now to be entered. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Larry Mueller here with Mike Crane, raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs you enjoy on the air. And whether your pledge is $10 a month or $100 a month or anything else, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
We've already heard from 5 people in this half hour, still looking to hear from 10 more in the next 4 minutes. Thank you so much if you've already given.
And if you haven't, give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Your gift funds the programs you enjoy.
Now, there's so much that you can love about our state of Wisconsin. It's a beautiful state. The parks and the forests, the farms, the cities, some of the best things about living here.
And we like to think of WPR as part of what makes Wisconsin special, like a natural resource, something that's available to everybody, something that's fundamental to life in Wisconsin. With your pledge, you keep WPR a strong resource that everyone can enjoy. So I hope you'll contribute right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Have you spent a dollar today? That would be pretty easy to do, right? If you bought a cup of coffee on your way into work, for instance, you probably spent a lot more than a dollar. But those are important things as part of your daily routine. Maybe a snack from the vending machine is called for, or you're headed out to lunch in a little bit.
You can give a dollar a day right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 and support the programs you enjoy every single day.
You know, at WPR, we have a core group of supporters who give and give generously. They're willing to contribute because they depend on the Ideas Network and WPR, and maybe you rely on WPR too, and for whatever reason, you just haven't given yet.
Yeah, we're here to tell you that WPR relies on new donors like you to grow and to keep high-quality programs on the air. Today's the day for you. Show your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Your gift, any amount that's right for you, is all it takes.
Eight more pledges to go in just another 2 minutes. We'd love to hear from those of you who've been thinking about pledging, or maybe you could upgrade your sustainer membership to add another $5 a month to your gift. We'd love to hear from you. We heard from Kaya from Appleton, who says that they listen in the car while they're driving, and they listen to public radio.
And Kevin and Monica from Cross Plains say they like this show a lot. And well, thank you, Kevin and Monica. Thank you if you've already given. If you haven't, now's the time to do it. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And thank you.